Hello, nerds, and welcome to the Engadget podcast. This is episode 35, TV Party. I am your host, Terrence O'Brien. I am joined this week by Dana Woolman. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. How about you?
I'm doing all right. You know, I made the mistake of listening to a very depressing album before I came on air, which I'll talk about a little bit more later. But yeah, I heard you did your homework last night.
I did.
You finally watched Jaws.
Yeah.
Which we're also going to talk about later.
Yes.
Which I'm super excited about. We will eventually be joined by Chris Velasco. He is unfortunately stuck in traffic. So when you do hear a third voice all of a sudden that you're very confused by, that's going to be Chris Velasco. And he's going to be a very important part of this show because we're going to talk all about the new iPad later. And he is the one who wrote the review. So nobody's better qualified to talk about that than him. I was editing it yesterday.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's going to make sort of a Muppet-like appearance today. He's just going to pop out of nowhere, and that seems fitting.
Yeah. Does Velasco make any appearances that aren't Muppet-like?
No, he doesn't.
No. That's just pretty much his, like, standard form, right?
Yeah.
Just vaguely Muppet-like. But let's get right into it, because we are, unfortunately, a little tight for time today. Big Boss is coming into the studio right after our podcast, so we kind of got to get things moving. Get out of here.
Yeah.
So let's start with Flame Wars, as we do every week. This is kind of where we debate some of the biggest stories of the week. And I wanted to talk a little bit about YouTube TV. So that's finally launched now, right? In New York, LA, and San Francisco, Chicago, and Philadelphia.
And it's what we call a rollout.
Yes.
It's begun rolling out.
It'll eventually get to the rest of the country, I guess, eventually, at some point.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea. But sort of the big question for me is, considering the limited lineup of channels and all of the competition it faces in this market, all of these like streaming live TV services, is it really a good value at $35 a month? So I think let's start with what are the prices of, like, its sort of competitors. PlayStation View is, what, roughly the same price, I think, at least to start. They have much bigger variety of packages, though.
I have to check on PlayStation View. I think Sling costs less, doesn't it?
I think Sling starts cheaper but also can get more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's part of the problem is right now it looks like that YouTube TV is a very limited offering. They have, like, one really basic set of offerings and one price point.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of hoping that either the software experience or the inclusion of YouTube Red is enough to really get their hooks in you.
Mm-hmm. Or even, I mean, just the brand recognition. But that's a strange thing because I don't think people think of Google or YouTube as a cable provider.
No.
Or a cable alternative, even.
So I'm trying to pull up the pricing for these other ones. Sorry, mm-hmm. This has been a little slow. So yeah, the cheapest PlayStation View one starts at $30. The cheapest Sling one starts at $20.
Mm-hmm.
The lineups have a lot of overlap between them. It's a lot of the same channels, but it does look like there's a bigger lineup of channels for the PlayStation View specifically. So for $30, it's 45 plus channels, including some stuff that you don't get from YouTube.
I don't use PlayStation View personally. I don't even have a PlayStation. But what you're saying matches everything I've heard about the View service, which is it might not be the one that comes to name first for a lot of people, but it is actually a good value in terms of what you get for the money.
I mean, so one of the big ones that seems to be missing on YouTube, and I may be wrong about this, so if I am, please feel free to tear me a new one in the comments, which is Comedy Central.
That stuck out to me also.
Yeah, and that's, like, kind of a really big one, I feel like. And I know it's part of Sling TV. I don't think it's part of the base package, at least, on PlayStation View. I'm kind of looking through all of these now. I probably should have done this before coming on the show. But I know the Viacom channels in particular have been sort of problematic, it seems. They're stepping away from streaming, and that's a really big company, a really big property to kind of be moving away from that stuff. I know they took all of their stuff off of Hulu. Like, you can't watch The Daily Show on Hulu anymore, which is kind of a big deal.
Oh, it's going to piss off a lot of people.
I mean, it's one of the only reasons I have a Hulu subscription. Like, I'm legitimately considering canceling it because of that. Because I think the only show now at this point I watch on Hulu, the only purpose it serves for me is Last Man on Earth. And once that show is done, I don't know what I would have that for. Do you even have TV at all? Do you have anything? Or you?
What? How do you think I streamed the thing last night?
Well, you have Netflix,
yeah.
I assume.
Oh, I see. I have a TV. I have a Roku stick in the TV. And I have subscriptions to Netflix and Amazon Prime.
Okay. So, but you don't have any live TV stuff. You are a fellow cord cutter.
I have a cable box with DVR and everything.
Oh, so you are like you're old school. You've got the TV.
I'm not a cord cutter. No, I'm not. This is a bigger picture conversation. I'm not sold on the economics of it right now. And I think what we're talking about here kind of underscores that, right?
Yeah.
That for $35 a month, I would still need to cobble together some other services to get all the content I want.
Yep. So I will say the one thing that YouTube has that kind of appeals to me, and I haven't really seen this on other services yet, is they actually do offer local sports. So in addition to having like the networks, they also have it's NBC's local sports channels. So if you live in New England and stuff, you can watch Red Sox games streamed because they have that provider. I think it's...
And wouldn't be on the MLB account if your MLB account was tied to that region.
Yeah, well, that is...
You have strong feelings about that.
Makes me twitch.
Yeah.
our archaic media system that just... I'm not meant to watch Mets games, apparently. That's just how it is. Can listen to them, but I can't watch them. So, yeah, like, that's kind of a big deal, though, and I'm kind of amazed that people aren't making a bigger deal of it. That's, like, been the one place where a lot of these sort of streaming services and a lot of cord cutters have suffered is live sports. You know, even if you have an HBO Now account, if you pay your $15, you can't watch pay-per-view HBO boxing, even if you pay extra for it. You have to have cable TV. You have to have access to traditional pay-per-view service. And that's kind of a deal breaker for a lot of people.
But are we saying this is maybe one of the few advantages of YouTube TV over its competition?
I think so. I think it's something that hasn't been made a big enough deal of, honestly. We'll see how it plays out. It's not enough for me because it doesn't have New York local sports things. Mm-hmm. And it probably never will, unfortunately, because it's just the CBS ones. So again, I can't find it in front of me, but they have. If you're a Red Sox fan, you can watch those. I think Philly is on the same network, so I think if you're a Phillies fan, you can still watch. You can watch those. I'm willing to bet one of the Chicago teams is as well. I don't know about San Francisco, but they don't have the New York ones. And part of the reason they don't have the New York ones, and they probably never will, is those are partially owned by pay TV providers. So the Mets are delivered by SNY, which is partially owned by Verizon, and the Yankees are on YES, which I believe is partially owned by Time Warner, Comcast, whatever the hell it is now. So those are just never going to come, and which is probably means I'm never going to buy any of these subscription services.
Okay, so local New York sports broadcasting is basically owned by a crew of different mafias that have divided up the region, and those mafias are corporations.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
That's how they lure you into it. They want you to buy their TV thing. If you live in Boston and you're looking to cut the cord and you're a Red Sox fan, the $35 a month for YouTube might not be a bad deal. It probably offers you a little bit more value than PlayStation or Sling, at least as a sports fan. Outside of that, I'm not really sold on the value proposition here, especially because, I don't know, YouTube Red is kind of garbage. Have you watched any YouTube Red programming?
Not much.
No. I watched Game Lab, Matt Pat, who is like one of these YouTube guys, and he did basically Mythbusters for video games. It was all right.
Mythbusters for video games.
Yeah.
It's a weird concept.
It is sort of a weird concept. So I've watched that. That was all right. And I forget the name of the show, but the guy who does Vsauce has another... They're really into their, like, Mythbusters ripoff shows at YouTube, because it's the same sort of thing. It's another, like, oh, we're going to do, like, try and play out thought experiment kind of stuff in the real world and do Mythbustery things. It's, again, it's all right. Vsauce is a cool channel, but I don't know if it plays out for a full half hour, like, properly produced TV show. So, yeah, I don't know. YouTube TV. It's an interesting thing. Not sold on it, but I'm not sold on any of these yet. And clearly you're not, because you're still paying Comcast or Verizon or whoever. I don't even want to know how much it costs.
It's not that bad.
No? Is it Verizon? Is that why?
No.
No? Okay.
I'm on Time Warner.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
They are my mortal enemy. That is a topic for another day. Let's move on, though, and talk Netflix. More TV.
Yes.
They decided to abandon their traditional 5-star rating system and go for simple thumbs up and thumbs down. What was their reasoning behind this? Can you talk us through that a little bit?
Right. So they had the 5-star rating system, and apparently people were mostly landing somewhere on either pole of that spectrum. Give it 1 star or 5 stars, people, but weren't really giving nuanced ratings. And in experiments, Netflix found that basically in moving to a pass-fail model, thumbs up or thumbs down, they got more ratings, which is ultimately what Netflix is after, just a bigger volume of feedback. And I have to say, so we went with the headline, Netflix's overly simplified ratings are here. Behind the scenes, I lost a battle on that headline. I was in a minority of people who didn't like that headline. I don't think they're overly simplified. I think it makes sense. But I'm curious to hear why you would have preferred a 5-star system.
Because I see nuance in it. For me, movies and television shows are not simply an I like it or I dislike it proposition. And I appreciate the sort of granular control over my tastes. You know, I love Tommy Boy. Tommy Boy is a great movie. But objectively, Tommy Boy is not a great movie. And I don't want to give Tommy Boy 5 stars just because I love it so much, based partially on like my nostalgia for it. Because I know that if I give Tommy Boy 5 stars... then I'm going to have to deal with Netflix recommending me a whole bunch of garbage SNL movies I have no interest in. Like, I don't want Night at the Roxbury to show up in my queue. Like, I have no interest in watching that movie. So that, like, finer grain control, being able to say, like, no, it's a 3, because I like it, I enjoy this movie. Don't not resurface it if it comes off of Netflix and comes back. Like, I want to watch it again, sure. But don't necessarily recommend me everything that SNL has ever made a movie out of.
Well, so, I mean, that partially answers the question I would have had, which is, who are these ratings for? Are they for you, or then what? I mean, for me, I once tried to use the 5-star system in my iTunes library. I gave up on that real quick. but that was really just for me, right? The Netflix ratings, I also never really had the patience for that either, but you're saying you're invested in it because you believe in Netflix's algorithm and to some extent depend on it for your recommendations.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's value in building nuance there. I am an avid... Oh, hey, look who's here, guys. Just come on in.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
How is it going?
Hey. So we're talking Netflix. Thumbs up, thumbs down, the death of the 5-star rating.
I'm a big fan.
You're a big fan?
Yeah.
By the way, welcome, Chris Velasco.
Hi, I just got here. I'm Chris Velasco, senior mobile editor, and New Jersey is the worst state.
Yeah, I mean...
We could have told you that.
Yeah.
Terrence has told me that.
They have.
If you ever get the chance to drag it out of him, get like the hot air balloon festival story out of this guy, it's incredible.
The hot air balloon festival was perhaps one of the worst experiences of my life.
Didn't you almost get into a fight?
Multiple times. I'm an impressive person that I can almost get into multiple fist fights in a parking lot
so
at a hot air balloon
festival. I mean, we're going off on a crazy tangent, but let me make sure I've got this straight. You almost got in a fight in a parking lot, got back in your car, presumably cooled off a little bit, and then repeated the process multiple times.
Twice.
That's still not a great look.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I spent more time in my car trying to get out of the parking lot than I did at the festival itself.
Or probably getting home for that matter.
Yeah. So.
I'm sorry.
So we were talking about the value of having a nuanced rating system for movies and TV, the five-star versus thumbs-up, thumbs-down. You're on the side with Dana. You think the thumbs-up, thumbs-down is good?
Oh, for sure. I mean, so I cannot begin to tell you the number of times I've sat down, thrown something random up on Netflix that I absolutely love, and just to see the star rating, they're typically like 1.5. It's like I like really trashy stuff. I keep hoping Netflix kind of picks up on that, but it never really does. So to take the sort of subjective quality out of it and just be able to say, hey, this is a good thing. Like, more likely than not, you will enjoy this thing. That's kind of what I'm after. Like, I don't really need to know where it falls on a spectrum for the entirety of Netflix users. I think once it kind of gets an understanding for what we as people enjoy, it's so much easier just to say, hey, yeah, go for it.
And that's the thing, right? Netflix's algorithm is their secret sauce. I'm sure a lot of R&D and money and time and resources have gone into that.
Right. Remember Netflix Prize?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, they're not going to obviously share their secret sauce with us, but I have confidence that it goes beyond just the number of stars given. I'm sure it incorporates your recent and overall history of what you've streamed, and also how much time you've spent. You know, like Scandal isn't good, right? And I've never watched this one. Scandal sucks, but I'll binge watch it, and so that might be the more important stat, right? Not what I say I think of it, but the fact that I spend a lot of time watching it. And I'm sure Netflix has data on all this stuff.
See, here's my question. Is that more important and more valuable to you, or more important and more valuable to Netflix? Because I feel like it's more important and more valuable to Netflix to you.
But if they use that for their recommendation engine that you're using, that's good for you also.
I don't know. We do have to kind of move on, unfortunately, because we're running out of time. But I will say this before we go. Even with the star system, my recommendations are trash. Most
of
the time.
Do you let other people use your Netflix account?
Not anymore.
What about your wife?
She used to. But that's not why my recommendations are trash.
Okay.
So I happen to watch a lot of educational programming because I'm a nerd.
Fair.
So, like, I've watched Cosmos probably 3 or 4 dozen times because it's whatever. And I watch, like, a lot of, like, documentaries and educational programs about, like, space and technology. I have watched every episode of Nova that is on Netflix, like, multiple times. So for whatever reason, Netflix now just thinks I like, quote, science and technology documentaries, period. And that includes lots of garbage about, like, conspiracy theories and, like, spiritual, like...
Yeah, but in fairness, those are... I wonder if Netflix is looking at what you're into and thinking, quote, unquote, hey, this is a very intelligent, rational guy. Let's throw him some weird shit that he's just going to find hilarious.
Yeah. So, but, like... Even with the 5-star system, it's really not always that good with the recommendations. I'm really concerned about what just simple thumbs up, thumbs down is going
to
do.
And really, adolescent Terrence just wants people to understand him.
Yes, I just want people to understand me. I just don't want 9/11 truther documentary showing up in my recommended viewing.
It's important to understand how some people think. I don't believe the words that I just said, but they sounded fairly good.
Let's move on, though, to group chat and the whole reason you're here, Chris Velasco.
We're going to talk about iPads.
iPads.
iPad singular. There is just one new iPad.
Yes.
It's not the most exciting iPad.
It is not.
But it is, if nothing else, an iPad. And it's probably going to do really well just because of that.
Well, I mean, it's not like the bar for... is really low there. Like, it's not like we've ever seen, like, a super underperforming iPad.
Yeah.
Apple makes an iPad, it sells a shit ton of them.
Exactly.
It always does.
And, like, that has caused some level of consternation in, like, the Apple fan community, because this is one of the few times Apple has really kind of conceded and built something that very much feels like a mass market device. Like, hey, it starts at $329, it's a little thicker, like, you can kind of tell they made compromises to get this thing's price point down to where it is. And some people are interpreting this as a race to the bottom, is the phrase that I've seen several times. And I'm just like, guys, iPad sales aren't great. Tablet sales aren't great. Like, they need to make some money. They're still going to make good iPads.
Yeah.
This isn't a bad thing. Like, what is the problem?
There's room in the market for a premium product and, like, a mainstream product, yeah. right?
I'd also say there's room in the market for, like, an unabashedly good, inexpensive tablet. And I got to tell you, when I was writing a review, which, by the time you see this, has been published already, I have not, like, I struggled so hard to come up with, like, alternatives you could go for in that price range. Like, the Galaxy Tab S2 was pretty good, but it is fairly old at this point. You could do an S3, but that's going to be probably twice as much as this iPad is going to cost. Like, all of the really high-performing stuff that feels on some level on par with this mm-hmm. cheapo iPad is $100-$200 more expensive. Like, that's kind of a big deal for Apple.
I guess part of the question here for me is, you know, they've made this mass-market device, but in general, tablet sales have been slipping. Is this going to be enough to kind of bring... And iPad has not been immune to that.
Right. Apple has. Certainly not.
Their sales have at least plateaued, if not started to drop a little bit.
I think we've seen them... iPad sales have dipped...
as much as the rest of the market.
Right, but with to some, an alarming degree of like regularity over the past few quarters. Like, yeah. it's kind of a thing.
So is this going to be the sort of thing that can kind of at least... stem the bleeding, if not cause sales to tick back up, do you think?
I think in the short term, it's going to be a positive for a while, if only because think of all the people who bought into the original iPad, they bought into the iPad 2. Like, they have these old devices, and you know what? Like, they still mostly work. Like, you can still use them to read and Gadget or whatever. Like, they're still mostly functional things. It's just that iOS as a platform has grown by leaps and bounds since those days. So a lot of the people out there are working with, in a lot of ways, a degraded experience. So by being able to offer this very clear upgrade path, like, hey, if you've got an old, ancient iPad that is starting to not work so great, yeah, here's the thing. For $300, that's actually really quite good. It's got an iPhone 6S's brain. It has the screen, more or less, from the iPad Air 2, just not laminated, so it's not quite as thin. It's not like the iPad Air 3, like a lot of us wanted or expected, but it's a very good machine, and it's a very clear path for people who... on some level have been left behind by Apple.
Do either of you still actually use a tablet?
Oh my God, yeah.
Dana?
No.
No, okay.
But did you ever?
I did briefly. I gave it my best shot.
Mm-hmm.
I've sort of reverted to my old ways. I mean, the app that I liked best when I was using a tablet were digital magazines.
Mm-hmm.
We had one of those.
Yeah, we did.
Which comes in really handy for business trips, which I don't even take many of anymore. But I still have a romance with my paper magazines. And
sure.
Otherwise, my phone is great for what I need it to do.
Well, I feel like that's kind of the issue Apple has had to kind of wrap its head around. Like, big phones are a thing.
Yeah.
They, in a lot of ways, supplanted small tablets. So I would be shocked if we saw another iPad mini after this one. So
yeah.
We're still working with like the mini 4 that came out like a year-ish, maybe two ago. So that's, I feel like that's probably going to go the way of the iPad Air 2 and just sort of get cut completely. Because, I mean, if you want that big but not huge screen, just get like an iPhone 7 Plus. You've got one device that covers all your bases.
Yep.
But I still, like, more often than not, I commute in on a train to the office. And in situations like that, where like holding a phone for like an hour and a half gets a little tedious, and I really don't want to pull out my laptop and like fire up a hotspot to just like bang out emails and stuff. Like situations like that, a full size 9.7-inch iPad or insert tablet here is perfect. Like I'd rather just sit there and read what I'm going to read, and I'd still have the flexibility to like swipe open and open a window and like bang off an email or a text message. Like it's phenomenally helpful for me at least.
I guess, I don't know, I abandoned the tablets kind of when the smaller tablets died, like as we got bigger phones. I had a Nexus 7 that I loved, and as that got a little bit long in the tooth, I had the Nexus 9, our review unit for a while, which is
boy.
Hot garbage.
Nexus 9.
That thing was...
I think that was the first like big review I did here.
Possibly.
It was not great.
No.
It wasn't a great foot to start off on.
It's not a great device. but what I kind of realized is I'm like you, Dana. I missed the magazines, which is mostly what I use my Nexus 7 for.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say I pay for digital magazine subscriptions that I straight up just don't read, which is really dumb. Like I have a subscription to Wired and GQ, and I don't read either of them because I don't have anything that's really like... enjoyable to enjoy the design on anymore.
Do you remember we talked about digital cleansing a few podcasts back?
Yeah, I should really cancel this.
You might be time for you to do some sort of audit and just like...
Yeah, no, no.
Find all the stuff that you're still paying for that you shouldn't
I think those are two that I can probably pretty safely cancel. I'm sure I haven't read an issue of either of those in at least 6 months. But, I mean, I paid for the year, so... Might as well just let it ride out at this point. That's, like, the only thing, though, that, like, holds any appeal for me on a tablet. Like, I don't know. I can do most of the stuff from a phone.
Yeah, and that will continue to be the case for most people, but... Having the option where you could fairly inexpensively like move up into this thing that, I don't know, for some people very ably bridges the gap between phone and more dedicated machine. Like I've definitely been able to spend entire like not fully like vacation weeks where I would just like leave my laptop at home and just have an iPad and get really everything I needed to get done. So I don't think the capability of these devices is not really in question. It's just the larger sort of context in which they fit, like, isn't there for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But by giving people this cheapo option that works pretty well, I think Apple's doing a really good job of capturing anyone who feels like they do have that context in their lives somewhere.
Well, I think that's actually probably one of the strongest things going for it is, you know, I think part of the reason the market kind of tanked for tablets probably is... with the death of the smaller form factor, prices for obvious reasons went up.
Right.
And a $200 Nexus 7 is a much easier sell than a $600 10-inch iPad. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a much different investment of money. It's a much easier thing to just say, hey, this one's like, it's not like an impulse purchase, but you're not going to like have to talk it over with your significant other before dropping any money on it.
It's more of an impulse purchase. Like you could feel a lot better about, I mean, maybe not better, but
$329 is still a lot of money to drop.
Yeah. But I mean, compared to some of the other options out there, I mean, the thing that a lot of iPad nerds are really kind of upset about is because in order to get that really slim, sleek design that we got with the Air 2, you have to now pay extra money for an iPad Pro. Like you have to go with a 9.7-inch iPad Pro. Like, there isn't a clear jump up for them. And, like, I get it. That really sucks. Like, I'm sorry, guys. But, like, companies like Samsung have jumped on this, too. Like, you could get last year's, or 2 years ago, I think now, the Galaxy Tab S2, which is a fine tablet. Or now, the Tab S3, which is a great tablet, that costs $600.
Like, yeah.
Tablets have assumed now, since we've seen the market for lower-end and smaller ones kind of fall off a bit, they've moved up into this sort of like prestige class where you feel like that's where you have to compete, and that's going to be really difficult for a lot of people to sort of like throw money at.
I know that you talked a little bit about how it's thicker and all of that, and that's been one of the sort of the complaints about it, it seems. But it did allow them to stick a bigger battery in it, though, right?
It did. So that is the biggest upshot. And to be clear, it not only has a bigger battery than the iPad Air 2, which was really small. Like, it was 27 watt-hours. It was less than ideal. It's actually even bigger than the original iPad Air, which is the body this thing is modeled on. So it's actually better than the thing than what we got, like, God, 4 or 5 years ago?
I have no idea.
I mean, it's...
Time means nothing.
Exactly. It shouldn't be surprised that this battery is better, but there are some upsides to it. So to all those people out there chanting, thinner is better, like... Come on, dial it down a little bit. Like, there's reasons this works okay.
I would gladly sacrifice a few millimeters just to like get a couple of extra hours of battery life.
Yeah, I've said that for a really long time, mostly with regard to phones, and I didn't really see that coming with this iPad. But yeah, really pleasant surprise. Like, it's not any more difficult or more like onerous to hold for an hour while you're reading a book. Like,
yeah,
it's fine, guys. Relax.
And so many of you people out there survived with the original iPad Air for
which weighed
long.
Like 5 pounds.
You thought it was like a marvel of engineering at the time. Maybe you should kind of chill out
a little bit. It's not actually 5 pounds. Please don't call me out on that.
We are running out of time, though, so it is time to get to the wind down.
Mm.
And, you know, suggest the readers, viewers, listeners kind of go check out a thing. Watch a thing, listen to a thing, read a thing. Do a thing.
Are you asking me to start because you're looking at me?
I'm
right
looking
now?
At you. Do you have something to recommend?
I do have a thing, and it's really so. There's a bit of a backstory involved with this. So I went to Mobile World Congress 2 years ago, and I don't know that this is actually a sanctioned thing, but I do this like take a book, leave a book thing because you get lots of people from different locales kind of rolling in and leaving their stuff behind. So I left some lousy. I think it wasn't lousy. It was like a Raymond Chandler novel, but like not one of his great ones. And I took this book off the shelf called The Dark Side of Love by Rafiq Shami. It's originally a German novel that was translated into English a few years back. And it's just, it's not my usual thing, but it's just fascinating. Like, it chronicles the intertwining lives of two prestigious Middle Eastern families. And, like, on the outside, it feels like this Romeo and Juliet thing, but, oh, there's, like, a murder mystery. Some guy's body was found in a basket above a cathedral. And then you jump back, like, 40 years to figure out, like, oh, well, the clans start off as, like, feuding goat herders and stuff. Like, it's frankly incredible. It feels like six books in one. I'm, like, halfway through it. I've been reading this thing for, like, 2 years. So if you have time in your life to invest, like, I feel like this is really
worth it. Is it a really long book?
It's, yeah, it's like Bible size.
Okay.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay. It's going to be, if I pick it up, it's going to be like Wilderness Warrior, which I think I'm 3/4 of the way through, 7 years
what,
in.
What is Wilderness Warrior?
It's a biography of Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm in for that, actually.
It's super interesting, but it's just, like, really dense. It's, like, 900 pages. It's, like, the tiniest of type. It's also, like, I have it in hardcover, so it's impossible to carry around with you. I chip away at it. Before we get to Dana, because she's kind of got the big one for the week, as she's going to have every week for the wind down, because she's getting homework assignments, I'm going to recommend that people go listen to the new Mount Erie album, A Crow Looked at Me. If you're not familiar with Mount Erie, musician, his name is, why is it escaping me for the moment? Phil Elverum. His former band was The Microphones, were also awesome. But the new album, the new Mount Erie album, is really beautiful, really depressing. So I would make sure that you are by yourself or don't have anything important to do when you give a listen to it. It's all about the death of his wife.
God.
So it's super heavy. I put it on this morning without really thinking about it and, like, legitimately started welling up with tears while listening to it at my desk.
Wait, I don't mean to laugh at your pain, but was this morning the first time you listened to this album?
It was. Okay. I knew that it was going to be, like, a heavy thing, and I'd kind of been like, I don't know if I can do it right now. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that I'm like, I really should watch this or listen to it. And I'm like, God, it's going to be really heavy, though, and I don't know if I have it in me. So I just put the Migos album on again. It's like my solution. I'll listen to T-Shirt on repeat and be a happy man. So I finally put it on this morning. And it is every bit as good as everybody says it is. It's a really gorgeous album, but it is really super, super depressing. The second track is all about him bringing his one-year-old child to the site where they were going to build their house and spreading her ashes.
Man, I can't even listen to this right
now. It's rough. But yeah, really beautiful album. Should definitely check it out, especially if you like feeling miserable and depressed.
I live in New Jersey, so like I choose that state for myself anyway.
Yeah. So
it's a perfect. Done.
Dana, though.
Yeah.
You did your homework this week.
I did.
You watched Jaws.
I should have done it sooner.
You should have. You watched Jaws last night.
Yes.
Live tweeted Jaws last night.
Yes.
Which also made me super happy.
It was a scary movie.
Everybody should, by the way, go read Dana's tweet
17
storm,
part
yeah.
tweet storm.
Which is spectacular. But let's start. What did you think of the movie?
I liked it a lot, and I liked it more than I thought I would. I mean, I never thought Jaws would be my kind of movie. I liked it a lot, and Devendra, who's not here, had warned me against watching it after Jurassic Park, as if to say that I'd be let down and wouldn't like Jaws as much. But I feel
disagree.
The opposite. This was a better movie for
I
Spielberg
agree.
Than Jurassic Park. I know I called Jurassic Park generic, and you got mad.
Yes, because it's not generic. It's a very good movie. But Jaws is objectively and subjectively a much better film.
It was, yeah. I mean,
personally, I'd probably argue that it's his best film. And Spielberg has a long list
of
very good movies.
Yeah.
I've never seen Jaws, or probably most Spielberg. Like, I've never seen E.T. That was Spielberg, right?
Yeah.
What? Never seen E.T.?
No.
Can you give him homework for
I think I've seen maybe half of, like, an Indiana Jones.
Can he get some homework? Why does he
have... Yeah, what?
Well, I feel like your homework to me is to listen to more Bruce Springsteen.
That's my homework to you literally every
no,
day.
No, I think E.T. takes priority and Indiana Jones.
I don't agree with you on that one for so many reasons.
I heard Crystal Skull's pretty good.
God, I hate you.
I think that's where I should, because like I should go in reverse chronological order, right?
I mean, they will get progressively better. I mean, no, actually they won't, because Temple of Doom is pretty bad, actually.
So what surprised me about Jaws, though, is I know that it was made 42 years ago, and
God, it hasn't
so
been that long.
These animatronic sharks, which I read were mostly malfunctioning during production, which is partly why Spielberg didn't show the sharks, but I think that made for a more suspenseful movie. But when the animatronic sharks did rear their heads, they're still scary.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's...
They're old and low-tech, but I mean, you can't hear it on Twitter. I captured it the best I could, but I did gasp out loud by myself a few times during that movie in a way that I didn't expect to, given just how old it is and how crude, relatively speaking, the effects were.
Well, I mean, I think... The ability of Jaws to still kind of scare you and build that suspense speaks to the power of, like, practical movie effects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is one of the things that I think Jurassic Park does really well. And one of the reasons why that movie ages so well is that there's a really good blend of practical effects and really top-notch, especially for the time, computer animation. But there's this physicality to, like, having an animatronic shark biting the bottom of the boat as opposed to relying on computer graphics for everything.
I mean, it was more than that here. It was the music and it was the camera angles.
I mean, it is, to be clear, an expertly directed film from top to bottom.
I started to have a Pavlovian response every time I heard the theme music.
Dun, dun.
It's like, oh shit, dun, what now?
So you realize we're going to play that just around the office around you now, right?
We're going to get them to play it over the speakers at 5:30.
Yep.
Just so everybody knows,
it's not going to go well.
At 5:30 in the afternoon at the office, they play music over the loudspeakers for some reason that we can't quite figure out, nor do we know who has control over it.
I actually do know.
Oh, do you know?
Yeah.
Are we allowed to? Can you share that information?
I'm going to request the Jaws theme.
I'm
going
to file a FOIA request to you so I can find out who I have to talk to about this.
So I'm glad you watched it. You finally now also understand the we're going to need a bigger boat reference.
They never got a bigger boat. Idiots.
Wait, would that have changed anything? Because I don't know how this movie ends.
Probably.
Okay, good to know. I'll keep that in mind.
Okay, so you need to watch, you should watch
Crystal
Jaws.
Skull, and then...
E.T. Okay. Start with E.T. Just watch E.T.
Okay.
What am I watching next?
That is a good question. So we've given you a pair of Spielberg films at this point, kind of like monster movies. Jaws really being a perfect kind of genre film. I don't know. See, this is the thing. We should have had this conversation before we came on, and we did not. Have you seen... You've seen all the Indiana Jones movies. Let's move away from Spielberg, though. Should we give her something like arty and weird? Well, should we go pop culture?
Here's my question. Are you exclusively trying to give Dana good things to watch?
Or is
like,
yes.
Or is like so bad it's good also possible?
I mean, if it's a really like a cultural touchstone kind of thing, so bad it's good.
Huh.
Give me
like
good stuff.
Like I'd say like Plan 9 from Outer Space is like a cultural touchstone.
Sure.
But it's also a terrible movie.
I was going to throw out Troll 2, which is objectively awful, but the greatest film I've ever seen in my life.
Troll 2 is amazing.
So good.
But here's what I'd say is if you watch Troll 2, you also need to watch the documentary, The Best Worst Movie.
Yes, in which the mom, it's revealed, kind of went a little crazy after this movie.
I don't know, are you feeling something super dumb and ridiculous, but also like... a sort of cult classic thing?
No.
Well, let's go cult classic. Have you seen Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Yes.
Okay, so that's okay. Not that I'm necessarily a huge fan, but I was thinking cult classics.
I watch Little Shop of Horrors.
Wait, you've never seen Little Shop of Horrors?
Okay, there we go. That's Dana's homework is watch Little Shop of Horrors. I'm going to give you extra credit homework, though.
No.
Yes.
No.
Can we film you singing it using the new Clips app?
No.
That I've used to capture you talking about your baked ziti, which is in the thing.
For extra credit, after you watch the movie, find the original ending and watch that as well. Easily found on YouTube, but watch the original ending, which is the ending from the play, but they decided it was too dark for the film, and so they changed it. the original ending, I argue, is a much better way to have gone. So,
can I clarify something? Were there not two? Like, wasn't there another earlier Little Shop of Horrors with, like, Jack Nicholson in it?
Yes, which is also very good.
But that's not what we're going to throw
out. That's not what we're watching. That is not the cultural touchstone. It's a very good movie, but it is not Rick Moranis.
Fine.
So, yeah. Go watch Little Shop of Horrors for next week. Dig up the original ending on YouTube. We will reconvene next week to discuss it. Any last thoughts before we close this one out?
Nope.
No?
All Dana, right. how was your dinner?
It was great.
Yeah?
Cooked it myself.
Baked ziti with bits of chicken sausage and mozzarella sprinkled in. I don't know why I've memorized that, but it's lodged in there, unfortunately.
She hasn't brought in scones again yet.
Dana hasn't brought in anything in a while, actually.
You're going to have to make scones. All right, we need to wrap this up browbeat Dana into making
scones. And Dana needs to go back to the kitchen, I know.
Dana, where can the fine people find you on the internet?
I am at Dana Wollman on Twitter, and as you can see, sometimes I rant about movies I am in the process of watching.
Chris?
Hey, you can find me on Twitter at Chris Velasco. Velasco spelled V as in Victor, E-L-A, Z as in Zebra, C-O.
It's pretty good. I like that.
My entire life I've been using that.
I am at Terrence O'Brien. Lots of E's, no A's. Please send us your feedback, your criticisms, your questions, whatever. We want to hear from you guys. You can also hit up the podcast on Twitter. It's at Engadget Podcast, or you can email us. It's podcast@engadget.com. We will be back next week. In the meantime, subscribe, rate, do a thing.
Live long. Prosper.
Podcast. Yeah, do that. All right, let's go.